Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, March 10th, 2016. Have to talk very fast tonight, a lot of material to cover. First of all, on the Oregon shooting that happened last month, this is an issue that I have not heard anybody talking about, and like I say, typically there's many people talking about this topic. But this is something I have not heard, and I have not heard anybody that I've talked to mention it, even though there's people listening to these various radio shows. Why were Oregon State troopers assisting federal agents outside the federal area that had nothing to do with the state of Oregon? Now, here's the contradiction. C-O-N-tradiction. If the state of Oregon had given away the rights to the federal property, then the jurisdiction would have been for any alleged criminal activity would have been strictly federal. It had nothing to do with the state of Oregon because they supposedly gave away the land. Now, what do they want? Do they want jurisdiction, kind of? Only when it comes to rounding people up and helping the federal government? Or do they not have jurisdiction? Do they want their cake and eat it too? It turns out that the people who shot Finnicum and killed him were state troopers. They had their little private internal investigation, found no wrongdoing, that they were completely justified in shooting him. That's an entirely another issue. The question is, why was the state of Oregon troopers pulling him over in the middle of nowhere? And they made this out to begin with like a routine traffic stop. Well, gee, it was complete with roadblocks, snipers, drones, helicopters, 50 cars from who knows where, what federal agencies, etc. But it was the Oregon state troopers who were stopping him. They stopped him not once, but twice. And now the video has been released. You can see it online, coordinating a camera, a cell phone camera, with the entire thing on film from the perspective of the people in the vehicle. And the first time they stop him, there's a state trooper, and he sticks his head out at the window, and he goes, "What do you want?" He said, "We're going to see the sheriff. You can come with us if you want, but that's what we're going to do. What do you want?" They don't respond. This is at the first stop. They apparently had already been shot at when one of the guys stuck their head out the window and they shot the left mirror off the vehicle. So they already knew that they were going to shoot at them, so they're hunkered down. The people in the back of the vehicle are hunkered down. And so anyway, the state trooper doesn't say anything. He doesn't say, "We're arresting you for speeding," or anything else. And there was no probable cause to stop them. It was clearly an ambush. Not just an ambush, but it was a two-stage ambush where they stopped him originally and then had no, nothing to say. And then he finally just said, "Well, we're leaving." So he goes and he starts up 2 miles down the road. They have an ambush with three cars pointed into the road, which he almost crashed into. He had to go around. He gets stuck in the snowbank. They shoot him before he even comes to a stop. So he gets out of the car. And I could see what he was doing. Now, if you've ever been hunting, you see animals do this in the woods. If you've been in a situation where, say, a mother has a nest, like a bird, like a pheasant or a quail, and they're at a nest, and they start running around and they start making noise, and the whole point is to distract you, to draw the attention away from the nest. And that's what he was doing. He was drawing the attention and any more fire, any more shooting that would occur onto him, protecting the people in the vehicle. That's what he was doing. He wasn't out there, you know, it's very clear that, you know, and he was had to be working on instinct because there was no time to think. He was came around a corner. He came into a snowbank, into a dead stop, had already been shot before he got out of the car, and then is like flailing his arms up. And so at any rate, they shoot him dead. The Oregon policemen, they have their little investigation, internal investigation, and claim no wrongdoing. Here is the crux of the issue. What jurisdiction did the state Oregon Highway Patrol have over anything that was going on here? If the state of Oregon gave the land where the alleged crimes were committed, if they gave it to the federal government, then they had no jurisdiction. It wasn't a state law that was broken. When the cars were driving down the road, there was no law broken regarding the state of Oregon. Where was the probable cause to pull them over? And they had already set up these roadblocks, so there was no probable cause. It was an ambush that was set up to try and probably get them to pull guns so they could just shoot them and blow them away. But nobody in this group pulled guns. Then they plant a gun, very clearly, this was planted by one of the policemen, on Finicum after he was shot, to make it look like he was going for a gun. And they tried to build up this story like he was hiding, had this hidden firearm, which was not the case. They traced the gun back to a robbery that happened over in the eastern United States. So one of the cops there, and this is standard procedure in the cop industry, they always carry a dud gun that they can plant on somebody in case they shoot a victim and there's any question about if they should have shot this person or not, because if they say, well, he was going for a gun, and they can show the gun, case closed. So they always have a gun on them that they can put on the victim. And this happens all the time. Standard procedure for cops. So at any rate, the question here that I'm bringing up tonight is one of jurisdiction. If they were driving down the road in Oregon, then the federal agents, why weren't the federal agents pulling them over, not the Oregon State Police? Because allegedly they had broken federal laws. But it wasn't. It was the Oregon State Police. What are the Oregon State Police pulling people over in an ambush, then shooting them when they react? Now, I know from talking to people in law enforcement that if you induce somebody to create what they call furtive motion or activity that they normally wouldn't have done if you didn't push them into doing this, which is clearly the case with the Oregon police, they basically murdered this guy. They forced him into a situation. They shot him before he came to a stop. He gets out of his car and he's walking around and, you know, already shot. They're forcing this guy into a situation where they then claim they have justification for killing him. And there were no Oregon state laws broken. Why was the Oregon state trooper out there in the first place setting up an ambush to pull this car over when there were no state, and they still, up to now, they have not said that there were any state laws broken? You know, if there was a lone cop out there and these guys were speeding or driving recklessly, that is a pullover. This wasn't a pullover. They had a 50 cars from behind and from all other directions waiting for these people. And they also had it set up so clearly in the video that they did this in an area where there was no cell phone service. So these people were trying to make calls desperately to get help. They're in the car. They're being fired upon, civilians, women, and a young girl, a woman and a young girl, and unarmed, with no provocation of any kind, shooting, and you see this all in the video. A horrific event in the history of this country. The other issue is, why didn't they arrest him in town? These people were going to town. They were talking to the sheriff. They had talked to all these people many, many, many times. So if there was an issue that they wanted to arrest him, they had many opportunities. You could see the federal agents at the location of the reserve. They were right there. They could have arrested, said, "You're under arrest. Come with us now." But they didn't. They pulled this ambush on a lonely country road out in the middle of nowhere with the specific intent of gunning these people down, including women and a young lady, not even 20 years old, totally unarmed. This is insane. And there's nobody talking about the jurisdiction issue. Where did the Oregon State Police have jurisdiction to pull this car over and to have a roadblock and then ultimately force this guy out of the car and then shoot him? This is insane. Where was the probable cause? Where was the crime against the state of Oregon? None of this is being talked about. And in the little clip I saw of the Oregon State Police, they said that they justified these guys killing because the guy went, it looked like he was going for a gun. He wouldn't have even been out of the truck and walking around if it weren't for an illegal stop. So they forced the guy into a situation. He's out of the truck. He's trying to protect the other people and draw fire on him. And then they say, oh, it was okay, they shot him. This is insane. This is evil corruption. Who in the state of Oregon gave the authorization for the Oregon State Troopers to pull this ambush in the middle of the road? And then the other thing is, we know now that a guy named McConnell, who was driving the rear vehicle in which one of the Bundys was in, they questioned him supposedly for a couple hours, give him his truck back and let him go. Okay, you're out of here, buddy. No problem. Wait a minute. What? Here's a guy that's driving the rear vehicle. He pulls over so that they can arrest the Bundys. He gets, questioned for a couple hours, and they let him go, give him his truck back, and say, hey, you're on your way. This is the guy because they had to know, they had to have pre-information that they were going to go on this road at that particular time of night and go to see the sheriff that was another 50 miles down the road after the stopping point. But they did it in the only place on that whole road that did not have cell service. This was an ambush, very carefully designed and implemented and carried out by the Oregon State Troopers, who had no probable cause to stop him. They had not committed any crimes against the state of Oregon. This was the state of Oregon claims, and the federal government claims, that they had given this land over to the federal jurisdiction, and therefore the state had absolutely nothing to do with it. Which do they want? Do they want to have jurisdiction, or just kind of have jurisdiction some of the time and then justify some of the things they do, but not other times? And the state does not go out and protect the citizen whose land is being robbed and being kicked in the face by these BLM agents, and the state does nothing to help these private citizens, yet it pulls over somebody that goes up there and says, hey, this is wrong, and that was not there was never any guns. The only people with guns up at the facility were the federal agents. None of the people occupying were showing guns, although there were some plants up there that tried to turn it into the typical government infiltration stuff. These are major questions, and these are going to come down the road because right now the government agencies are controlling the dialogue, and they're backpedaling, trying to position themselves to make it look like it's just okay to have 50 cars ambush somebody in the middle of the road. There's no offense that occurs. There's no probable cause. And when the guy gets out and tries to react, which they forced him to do, they shoot him and kill him and say it's okay. Excuse me, this is not okay. It looks like the state of Oregon has a bad case of selective law enforcement going on. And nobody's talking up there. They're covering their tracks. They're covering their butts. On Donald Trump, the American phenomenon, in the spirit of America. Now, let me say something. I don't promote anything political at all. But I want to give a perspective here that probably you're not going to hear on the evening news, and you're not going to hear it from Donald or the Donald camp. First of all, on a very positive note, I've always said, with all the talented people we have in this country, scientists and engineers, businessmen like Trump, very successful. He's gone bankrupt, I understand, a couple times and then built up an empire. And he has high-quality facilities, the world-class facilities that he's built. Everything is world-class. His employees are very happy. He has employed so many people. So absolutely, very, you know, in terms of the candidates, I mean, there's no comparison between the politically bought and paid for liars that are normally normally there. But the real question is, what's the real problem in the United States? Do we need Donald Trump to run the country like a Fortune 500 company? Let's look at the real problem. Before the 1900s, before the takeover of the Federal Reserve of the U.S. banking, I've got some pictures of New York City, and it's all the horse-drawn buggies, etc. Everybody's walking around beautifully dressed. You don't find people in New York City dressed like this today with very fine clothes. These were the people that were basically financially extremely well off. The country was extremely well off because we didn't have taxes. We didn't have the Federal Reserve and a growing national debt on fiat money that was worthless. We didn't have world wars. That was yet to come. Remember 1913? Federal Reserve comes in 1914, World War I. By 1917, the U.S. is full bore into World War I, then followed by all of the laundry list of wars that followed. Donald Trump, unless he gets rid of the Federal Reserve and the CIA and the IMF and the World Bank and everything, all of the garbage that goes with it, then we are going to be condemned to be working under the burden of this. He's talking about paying off the federal deficit created by a bunch of con men who work for the International Monetary Fund, which drives the World Bank, from the Vatican, which drives the Bank of London, which drives the Federal Reserve, which drives the wars, etc. By the way, ISIS, they just took out a leader of ISIS. He was one of the premier students in the U.S. training camps, premier leader in ISIS over there in the Mideast. Yeah, that's what's going on. So unless Trump goes for this, and I suspect he's not a dumb guy, in the back of his mind, he knows this, but how do you get out and talk about that on the campaign trail? I like the way he talks about Hillary Clinton, that she's basically would be a very poor opponent. And he said he doesn't even expect she'll be able to run because she's going to be heading towards prison, which is true. And anyway, so that's a little bit of political analysis on Donald Trump. But if of all of the candidates, I've said this on the air, of a score from negative 10 to positive 10, all the rest of them I'd give a negative 10, or Hillary I'd give about a negative 75, criminal, just, anyway. But Trump I'd give probably a positive 2. If he goes after the Federal Reserve, starts issuing our own money like Kennedy was going to do, gets rid of the CIA like Kennedy was going to do, gets rid of the IMF, dumps the federal debt, just says we're not paying it, take it and stuff it, we're going to start producing our own money here and start living the good life again, the way America should be, I would give Donald Trump a 10 plus, and I would actually go out and vote for the guy. Other than that, I think he's going to win without my vote. But until somebody steps up and cures the real problem, you're not going to have a solution. Just a quick notice on the water products. I've introduced the in-house, whole house system chlorine and odor removal tank. And this is right now priced at $1,125. It's on my webpage, on the sales page. And this is because you don't want to be showering in chlorine. You don't want your clothes being washed in chlorine. And chlorine is one of the things that goes through your skin, is absorbed into your body the fastest. So you don't want to be taking a hot shower in chlorine. You cannot, you could, if you were a millionaire, you could build the ceramic GF filters that take out everything and have a whole house filter that takes out everything. But for the average person, this water, this point of entry, it's called point of entry tank, to remove chlorine, it was started out at a listener wrote in and said, do you have anything? My wife cannot have chlorine in the water. And so anyway, I said, you know what the heck? I'm going to put this up on the webpage. So anyway, it's there. I'm not going to talk anymore about it. Free shipping, $125 shipping for this baby, free. So it's like going down to the store and getting it, except you're getting it from me, and you know it's a quality unit. There's no maintenance. There's no upkeep. There's nothing to open up and pour salt in, none of that. Your water softener that's in your house is for that. It takes out minerals, excess mineral content like iron and sulfur and things like that. But it doesn't take out chlorine. And chlorine is in the chloramines, and some of the other things that this tank takes out are very harmful. So anyway, that's there. The other water filter product, new, it's an inline filter, and it's mainly, you can put this on your kitchen sink. I, of course, have the above sink adaptable water filter that you just very simply plug on with a hose, screw it into the faucet, a standard faucet at your kitchen sink, or the bathroom, I might add. A lot of people like this because in the bathroom, a lot of people buy two of them. One for the bathroom because you're brushing your teeth, and this is a final filter. This is the same GF quality as in my regular gravity feed filters, but in a pressurized version. And now there's one that goes under the sink so that you don't have the little tank. It requires a little bit of connection and a little bit of something that anybody can do themselves. Comes with a self-installation kit and everything, and then you have the little spigot up on the sink. You just push the knob and it the filtered water comes out. But also for animals. Now here's something. A lot of people have a faucet, or they have, like horses in a stable, they have a spigot at each horse stall. People are installing these in their horse stalls, one in each stall. So it's one filter. It's a couple hundred bucks for each filter in each stall. But they can use tap water for their horses, because horses are very susceptible to chlorine and all of the other stuff that's coming in the tap water. So this is a way. A lot of horse owners have sick horses because of the water that I understand that some of the expensive horses, they're trucking in water, great expense, so they can get some semblance of water for these horses. But this is the solution. So anyway, it's a great product. It's the same GF filtration as my gravity feed water filters. Takes out everything. leaves the minerals in the water. And by the way, as long as I said that, I'm going to go off on a tangent here. People are going, well, how can you have a filter that lets some of the minerals through and doesn't let other things through? Well, these are intelligent. That's because the best word you can say is they're intelligent filters. They target the things that we want to take out, and they don't target the things that we want to let through at the levels we want to let through. So, once again, there's nothing like this any place in the world. Don't even go I don't even talk about competition because there is no competition. Plus, my prices are lower, and especially if you buy 10 packs. These things, you can buy 5 years worth of filters for a few hundred bucks, and then you're set. Anyway, I'm not going to talk much more about that, but this is very exciting. I actually have some other commercial products that are coming out, large-scale products, but most of you would not have a use for those. There again, these are custom-designed large-scale water filter systems for industry. So at any rate, on to the next topic. Phony Noah's flood story. Oh, I don't even want to read this. I just want to comment. There's some people that went over to the Black Sea, the guy that discovered the Titanic, oh boy, famous. Okay, that was great, I admit. Treasure Hunter has some great successes with that, but goes over to the Black Sea, claims that the Black Sea was the source of Noah's flood, and then, really, I looked in the article, and they didn't discover anything. It was just riding the wave of this concept, which is totally bogus, that somehow there was a glacier that melted and it fled into the Black Sea and it broke a dam and it moved over there and that was Noah's flood. Well, wait a minute, boys and girls. The Noah's flood, perfectly clear, 40 days and nights of torrential rain. And why did Noah build an ark? How did Noah know about this? Because Noah knew that the comet was coming. That's how he knew. Somebody clued him in. Who clued in Noah? We don't know. He doesn't really say. He said, God told me. And so we don't really know. But the earth passed through a comet tail for 40 days and 40 nights. And if you think this is hard to imagine, if we would have gone through the tail of Comet Hale-Bopp, we would have spent around 3 to 4 weeks. And so that same approximate period of time, and it would have taken us, would have blotted out the sun. There would have been a lot of storm activity because we were in the tumultuous electrical discharge in this comet tail. Plus the water would have come pouring in from all sides for that entire time. We would have lost a lot of energy. The earth would have glaciated. It wouldn't have caused a pole shift because we were out far in the comet tail. So all of the Noah's flood effects are predictable, first of all. So old Noah would have built his ark and knew that this thing was coming. Somebody clued him in, and everybody's looking and laughing at Noah until the rain started to fall. And I believe that story. That's a true story. So anyway, but this phony Noah's flood story, where it was caused by a dam breaking, and, you know, how did Noah, was he that great a geologist that he said, glacier is going to melt over here, and it's going to flood this area, and it's going to cause this dam to break, and then it's going to flood where I live, so I better build myself a boat. Well, Noah would have been far better off just to move over to the next hillside where it wasn't going to flood. Would have been far easier and move his animals over there. Not a problem. So this idea that it was somehow a local flood due to a dam breaking, a natural dam of dirt, it's ludicrous. It is so goofy that I'm not going to spend any more time talking about it, only that these stories keep hitting the press. And so I want, especially young people, oh man, you're being hit with so much phony baloney today. I was talking with a teacher last week that teaches high school, and I made that comment that these poor kids are just being hit with so much absurdity, and she goes, oh my goodness. She said the teachers are just fit to be tied. They don't know where to turn. They have to teach this complete nonsense. They know it's complete nonsense, but they're there because they're trapped there. That's their paycheck. Anyway, this is a conversation I had with a real teacher in a real school in the unreal United States. Okay, so on to the next topic, something called stingrays. Stingrays. Now, a stingray is a very fast Corvette race car. That's one thing that we know as a stingray. Another one is the kind of like that fish-like thing that swims in the ocean, a stingray. They can get pretty big and, you know, somewhat, you know, they're vegetarian, so they're not going to eat you like a shark, but they got that sharp tail, which is dangerous. So anyway, stingrays, that's another one. But stingray is a term for a military technology that has gone public. When you look at that big cell tower up there, they have various cells. You know, you have your T-Mobile, your Verizon, your, you know, Mediacom or whatever. All the various have their cell towers up there. And alongside them, there's one that's put up there, a military-grade cell tower. And what they can do is because they give a stronger signal. Now, here's what happens. Let me explain. When you're on your cell phone and you're driving down the highway, okay, you're connected to a single cell tower. And you're talking, but now you're getting far away from that tower and you're getting closer to another tower. So when the signal from another tower gets stronger, you do what they call jumping towers. You jump from that tower to the next one. And when you drive down the road farther, you jump to another tower. And this is, by the way, why cell phones don't work in airplanes, because you're flying by these towers at about 400 miles an hour and they can't keep up. They want bing, bing, bing. They don't connect. That's why the 9/11, all these cell phone calls from airplanes was ludicrous. And that's why they don't have you turn on your cell phone in an airplane so that you realize that, hey, you can't make cell phone calls from airplanes. Doesn't work. Sorry. Sorry, 9/11 truth. From the government baloney. There were no cell phone calls from airplanes. Although those people did make calls, so they were in a prison someplace being held and probably killed. And all the airplane crashes were phony military planes, not commercial planes. Just part of that story. Okay, well anyway, a stingray is a cell tower that can overpower the other ones and take over your phone call. Now you think you're talking to, you know, whoever you're talking to, grandma or whoever you're talking to, and all of a sudden your call is taken over by one of these military stingray antennas on the same tower as your other one, because they send out a stronger signal. Your phone jumps to that thinking it's the new tower with the new frequency, and you're locked into that now, and all of a sudden you are being tapped. And the police, local, do this all the time. They are tapping into people's phones, unauthorized search and seizure, and this is happening all the time. So I just wanted to let you know, if you're talking on your cell phone, any moment you can jump onto one of these military, and this is being... the listeners are the local police department. No authorization, no warrant, nothing. Completely unauthorized eavesdropping on every American that passes by. Just a bit of reflection on life. We, as a civilization, should be very advanced. Where should we be today? We should have non-GMO food. We should have wonderful local food variety. We should have imported food that comes from literal, real organic farms. I like Putin, and a lot of people in the U.S. really like Putin. In fact, Putin and Trump are buddies. This is something very beneficial for the United States. They would make a good pair as world leaders. Because they both understand things. Putin opened up vast areas to the public and said, you go out there, we'll help you, we'll do whatever we can. We want you to grow organic food we're going to be the number one world supplier, exporter of high quality organic non-GMO food. GMO doesn't exist in Russia. You can't find it. It's outlawed. And so this is what Putin is doing. He's helping the people. Those poor people can go out there, have a place to live, a place to grow the best food, to be the healthiest they can be, and to then turn it into profit by selling it on the world market, being the premier supplier. I just saw an ad for Cuba. Cuba is exporting honey, non-GMO organic honey from Cuba. High quality product shipping worldwide now. This is what's going on in the rest of the world, while the United States is still laboring under the dogmatic stupidity of a guy like Obama or on the onset of Hillary Clinton. These people are evil, stupid, ignoramus people. Anyway, but reflection on life. Where should we be today? The United States should be the premier country in the world. We should have saving our forest. We should be using earth products to build our houses. We should, the problems. The only thing I disagree with Trump is that he wants to build a wall along the Mexican border. I disagree. Let's build an economy in Mexico where all of those Mexican people, and I know a lot of them, I talk to them, I used to live in Mexico. I know all about the two-layered society there, the rich, super rich, and the super poor. And I lived amongst both of those when I was there and talked to them. I traveled all over Mexico. I was at archaeological sites. I know Mexico and I know Latin America and I know about a lot of other countries. But give those people jobs down there, but don't take American companies down there. Give the Mexican people real jobs that have benefit in Mexico and help their society. Get them out of the World Bank, too, so that their money stays within Mexico. And you know what? 99% of all of those Mexicans in the United States would go there in a heartbeat. If they could go back there and live in Mexico, 99% of them would go. And you'd be begging some other ones to come back, become citizens, because a lot of them are hard workers. A lot of them are not. There's, like anything, if you say, well, gee, Mexicans rob banks or, do other things. Well, hey, so do white people, so do blacks, so do, Christians, so do Jews, so do Arabs, everybody. There's no pure race out there that doesn't have their social problems. Excuse me. We're all in this deal. There's a lot of good people and there's some bad apples. I don't care what group you're talking about. But I know the Mexican people and they're here because there ain't nothing there. I'll take anybody that, wants to deal with this problem. Take them down there and show them the conditions that those people live in. And they make very little bit money here, but they send it home and they try and help their families. Give them a decent job there, give them a decent life, take the money away from the rich sons of you-know-what that are robbing these people and keeping all the wealth for themselves, distribute it amongst the people, have decent employment, decent jobs, decent housing. They would all go back there. They love their culture, the music, the history, everything. Don't build a wall. Take the money that you were going to build the wall with, Donald Trump, and create some jobs down there. You know how to create jobs. Do that. And those people will go there. You don't have to put them on a bus and ship them out or deport them. They will go there. They will find a way there. And they'll, they want a decent life. They're just like anybody else. Not too hard to figure out. So just a little reflection on life there. Water rights around the world, the weekly water watch, I call it now. There's a country, not that big of a country, and it's in third world country status, where this coming week, international corporations are invading it to take away water rights from indigenous people. I'm working on having an effect on this, and I'm not going to say any more than that. And of course, I'm always nonviolent, anything that I do. But the corruption that exists in these places where a few people make a lot of money, a lot of it coming under the table, and selling away the literally the livelihood of these poor people. But it's a multi-layered issue. They want to destroy these people because they hold the original seeds of plants that people can live on. They want to destroy these people so they can come in, have Monsanto, GMO food. All these people will become toilet cleaners and the daughters will become prostitutes. This is what the International Bank has in store for these poor people. A lot of people criticize Fidel Castro and Che Guevara. But let me tell you something. When those guys went into Cuba, Cuba was a disaster. I would want any of you that oppose that thought to go back, go into a time machine, go back into 1950s Cuba, and you lived there for a while under the conditions. They didn't, that many of those people never saw a cow in their life. There were no chickens. Anything that was produced was taken by the government into Havana, where the CIA and the mafia ran rampant, and that was the playground of the rich and famous, Havana. Yeah, read about the real story, and then you'll understand why. I met a doctor, a woman doctor, spent half of her life as a doctor in Cuba. And all of the stories you hear about Cuba are Western press, you know, misinformation. So I find it comical also that two of the candidates, for neither which should be even running, Rubio and Cruz, neither one of them are citizens. Talk about Obama. Hey, these two guys are registered not citizens. Cruz is from Canada. He's not a born American. He was born Canadian, you know, of a Canadian father. He was born in Canada. His birth certificate is in Canada. He only became American citizen a number of years ago. And Rubio is the same thing. His parents were not American citizens. These guys shouldn't even be in the race. But I find that's odd that these are the Cubans that left Cuba when Fidel came in. Look who they're associated with. Cruz and Rubio, big honchos. Cruz's wife is, you know, with Goldman Sachs. She's in the big banking community. They roll with the high rollers there, buddy. You know? Anyway, excuse me for going off on a tangent. Just a quick note on Planet X. Get ready for springtime disinformation. There, it's already come on out big time. And by the way, some of the predictions are, hey, right now, today, Planet X. Hey, did you look up today and see Planet X? I didn't. I mean, I looked up, but I didn't see Planet X. So the, you know, the misinformation, but brace yourself. We're just early in the springtime yet. So that'll be coming, you know, a lot of that should be coming down the pike. In fact, May, I always say merry, merry month of May. May is always the month, starting going way back to Crazy Lady Talks to Aliens, Nancy Leader. And, you know, anything that happens today, oops, that's Planet X. You know, just an absurd line of you-know-what, but it's coming. So just to give you a fair warning. Just a brief mention of the International Monetary Exchange Rate. I did a show and some commentary on this some time back. But the dollar, which is pretty closely coupled with the euro, has been diving in the last week. I think since probably about the 18th of February, they peaked. The highest, probably relative to many third world countries, the euro and the dollar peaked to all-time highs in February. Now they're crashing. So what's the real reason for this? There is no real reason. These are completely manipulated international banking community fraud being perpetrated on these third world countries. And when you, and all of a sudden they were dropping down to levels that had not been seen since possibly October or before. But then all of a sudden they would shoot up. What happens when these things drop and then shoot up and go back and forth about 10 times a day? Well, people who are inside traders know when these things are going to go down and down and down and down. And then you see the people running to the ATM machines, taking out their money before it drops any farther, and then all of a sudden it goes up again. You know what? Somebody just made a lot of money because they can manipulate the international monetary exchange rate at will. They know when it's going to go down. Typically, it goes back up. But once people get that pattern of it goes down, okay, now it's going to go up. But then they keep driving it down and down and down and down and down. And the people are going, oh, my goodness. And then so those people who are think they know what's going on, all of a sudden they get desperate. They sell. And all of a sudden it starts going back up. The Rothschilds, they are so fun to have on this planet. I just love them all enough to put them on a ship, drive it out to the middle of the ocean, and sink it. By the way, that's what they did to the Astors and a lot of the very wealthy, independent money, American business people who had made, were making big inroads. And this is why the banks were not succeeding when the Titanic went down. Look at all the people on there. J.P. Morgan had a ticket, and his old art collection was supposed to be on the Titanic. Last-minute cancellation. Gee, J.P., did you have a little inside information that maybe the Titanic wasn't going to make her across the old Atlantic Ocean there? Lots of cancellations. But who went down with that ship? A lot of the American old money, and within 5 to 10 years, the Federal Reserve, the international banks, we're already into New York City getting established so that on Christmas Eve 1913, the Federal Reserve was voted in. Isn't that special? So at any rate, a little bit of commentary there on the history that you don't learn about in schools, kids. Now I'm going to turn a little bit. This is a course called Economics 102. Economics 101, I've talked about many times, and that's kind of the crash course on the real world of economics. But Economics 102 is what should you do? So here's what I would encourage all of the people out there, everybody out there, even if you've got a good paying job. Number one, start a cottage industry. Start making something. Start manufacturing something. You have the internet. You can put up your products. I know women that are crocheting very beautiful clothes. They're very good at it, and their time. They're making a good amount of money for their time. But remember that is what I call tier one income. Tier one income is where you make something, you sell it. Okay, then you go out and buy more materials and you make another one and you sell it. That's tier one income. But it's a good form of income. It's very solid, and if you have a good product, then you can sell that and have another stream of income. I also talk about something called multiple streams of income. And this is something you can do. I do this, you can see it on my radio show, and I don't become, I'm not a rich person, I don't have huge amounts of money coming in, but I have multiple streams of income. And so this month, one of them does pretty good, and I go, oh, that's pretty good. And the next month, it doesn't do quite so well. And then I go, oh, I got to do a little work on that, get that plate spinning, do a little more work on that one. And then, for example, I have Via Vientes, I have carrot bars, I have of course, my water filters, I have my books, and various things. So anyway, a lot of it is marketing, getting it in front of the right people who then go, gee, that's interesting, I want that, or I need that water filter, or whatever it is. And of course, a lot of you don't have access to a radio show like I do. So, but you have, you know, a people that you talk to, that type of thing. The biggest thing you can do is have a smile on your face when you talk to people, and people, you know, will talk to you a little extra. And you can throw out, here's the trick of being a salesman. You don't really sell anything. You find people that have a mindset for what you're trying to promote. You look, you talk to people. You can usually do that in a one-liner in about 3 to 5 words. You can get a feeling for if somebody has a mindset to be predisposed to potentially buy what you have. And like for a woman making dresses could say, oh, you know, I just don't find what I like at the department stores anymore. And somebody goes, yeah, you know, and some lady goes, you know, I don't either. I go there and it's expensive and I don't like it, but I still have to buy clothes. And bingo, there's a person who's predisposed to buying your stuff. And if you have a web page or pictures on your cell phone or whatever and say, well, I make these things, you know, I'll show you a couple next time we talk. Okay, great. I'd like to see some. Oh, here you go. You know, that is salesmanship without selling something. You probe people's interest levels. If you come up to somebody and it's, you know, another woman and she says, oh, I'm so busy. I'm always, you know, I don't have time for anything and whatever. You know, that person probably isn't a good prospect because it's going to take a little time for you to present your product, this type of thing. So you basically test the waters by conversation that doesn't have anything to do really with what you're selling. You're just getting people's interest lined up. And here's the reality if you do this. This is economics 102. If you do that, let's start out if you don't do that, and you just go out and you cold call, it'd be like the old salesman going up and down the street knocking on doors trying to sell something. Okay, well, if you're selling something for the kitchen, most of the time the person that answers the door is the woman that works, you know, lives in a house and does the housework, etc. You know, so you have some kind of chance of selling something household to that person. But if you're just out in the general public, how do you know that that person is interested in your product? Well, it's you're narrowing the numbers down quite a bit. There's, of 100, here are literally the numbers of the 100 people. If you just went up and cold called 100 people on the street and said, you know, here's what I'm selling, would you like to buy this? You would get about less than 5% success. So you'd be wasting a lot of your time not getting any place. You'd be, you know, you'd be frustrated and you wouldn't do well. But if you do this tactic of going out and simply talking to people, and like for carrot bars, you talk to somebody and say, you know, what do you do for your retirement? What kind of plan do you have for retirement? And a person goes, well, you know, I'm really worried. I got this 401k and that's a dropping in value. And I put money into, you know, this pension. And they're saying that that isn't going to be there when I retire. Okay. There's a person that should be investing in carrot bars, which is gram-sized gold. So you're not selling anything. You're just determining predisposed mental conditions of people. Now you have a person, they're concerned about their retirement, or if it's a case of Via Viente, they're interested in their health, they're interested in becoming, you know, they're worried about the fact that you don't have nutritious food today, in a supplement. Those are the kind of things that you look for. They'll trigger, you know, interest in other people. They're already predisposed. They want something, but they don't know what it is yet, and you come along with the solution. So whether it's the woman making the crochet dress in her house, you know, or whatever, and what I find is everybody has a talent. And everybody out there that you meet, you go, well, I don't meet that many people. Actually, you do. You would be surprised how many people you actually know and meet. And by the way, your relatives are usually the worst people to approach. I'll tell you that right from the beginning. Don't try and sell to your relatives because it's a bad, you know, a lot of times it's just not a good combination. Work with people that you don't know, you never met before, and here's what's going to happen. Start to find people that'll sell your product. This is the future. So kids, don't worry about, get a good high school education, get a college education or whatever, but start to market, start to become a business person, start to become a person with products. Look at, if you go to my webpage, go to my sales page, look at all the products that I have there. These are top of the line products. When somebody opens my stainless steel water filter and pulls those GF filters out that are nationally certified, that's the highest quality product on the planet. You cannot find anything better, and I'm very proud of having that product line. You know, it's really, really good. I'm proud of my books. I'm proud of my calendar that I invented, the Recalendar Sunstar Clock. There's nothing like that anywhere on the planet. Most of the ancient mariners would have loved to have that thing in their hand when they were sailing around the ocean, believe me. So at any rate, this is, I'm running out of time here, but my recommendation to kids, and to attract somebody like Richard Branson. When he was a kid, he was starting businesses so that when he got old enough to have a little bit of money, then he started Virgin Records, made that, okay, took some money from that, started something else, and he learned how to do business. Donald Trump teaches business school, but he never really, you know, he learned by doing it. And this is how you learn to do anything. So at any rate, everybody, including kids, start with that Kool-Aid stand out in the street and then take your money, take part of it and buy, you know, some Barbie dolls or whatever, but take part of it and invest in something. And, you know, not all your businesses are going to succeed. One time I wasn't doing quite so well in my life, and I went out and I started five businesses. And I said, I got to do something here. I started five businesses. The one that was least likely to succeed, in my estimation, was the one that took off and carried me for a period of about 4 years financially. So you never know. Don't try and estimate what the public wants or what the public is going to respond to. Just go out and do it. It's like a lot of singers. They pick up a guitar, they start singing, and, out comes something that people like, a particular style, a voice, a whatever it is. You don't know. Unless you do it, you're not going to know if the public's going to like it or not. Anyway, Economics 102. By the way, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. That's seven letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.